let me go through and give everybody else an opportunity. Basically, I want to cover things that are relevant to your interests and, you know, things that you could take away and use, you know, maybe at your workplace or maybe the things that you're tinkering with and you're trying to get into. So you can kind of go around the room and kind of say what, you know, why you're here, what you're looking to get out of this, what's interesting to you. You know, can I start with you?
Chris, I'm just checking stuff out, seeing what's out there.
Cool. And where do you work?
I work for Mainline Information Systems.
Okay. Cool. So you know?
I know John.
Okay.
Yeah, all John's work went to Chris.
Yeah.
Okay.
Sort of. Not really.
Nice.
All right. I'm Wayne. I'm an aspiring system administrator, so my mind's completely open to everything. So trying to learn it all. That's all.
I'm Mike. I actually work with tech systems, and I'm probably the least technical person here. But I'm just happy to meet everybody and try to bring this group of people together. So I actually, you know, can read a definition about what DevOps is, but I am completely clueless, Charles, as to what it actually is. So, you know, anything that you teach, hopefully I can be a sponge today myself.
Yeah, and guys, just so you know, Mike offered to sponsor the group, so thanks, Mike, for that.
My pleasure.
If you guys need a job, he's probably the guy to go talk to.
So, excited to be here. And like I said, it's a small community. I think we all know that. It's good to see the friendly faces and see some new people. So, hopefully this is an opportunity for everybody to learn something new today. Thanks, John.
Welcome.
Round 4.
Hi.
Hello,
everyone.
My name's Eric. I came to find out more about Puppet and DevOps. Like, Puppet looks like a new cool thing that has a lot of promise, and I'd like to learn more about it, at the very least. Cool.
We're just going around and introducing ourselves and saying why we're here, basically, what we're interested in.
Okay. Tom? Sure. I'm Tom. I'm a project manager here at Reliant, so I'm interested in Puppet if it helps Charles get his work done faster.
Okay, hi everyone, my name's Laura, and I'm here because I'm trying to just understand Puppet better and all the technology better, so.
Are you use Puppet, or?
Not yet, maybe potentially.
What do you do?
I work with tech systems. I work with Mike.
Cool.
Yeah.
John?
I just came over to <It's> so funny.
Sure, sure.
Hi, I'm John. I just started working here at Reliant. Good, so I'm always interested in what Charles has to teach.
Right. I'm Brian with Northwest Regional Data Center, part of the university, and I'm interested in Puppet and other management types of tools to make it a little easier.
I'm Christian. I'm an FSU student, and I'm here to just learn in general.
I never heard of Puppet until Michael brought it up, but I don't know, I like to learn new things anyway, so hopefully I can just absorb everything.
I'm Jesse, a pissed off network engineer.
That's not common.
VPN tunnels are up and the network is not down, so
leave them alone.
Have you tried stopping and restarting it?
No shut, that's all I do. I know, like, Cisco's path for software-defined networking, networking as a service, and how they want to do programmatically build out networks within their infrastructure. I am interested in seeing how other people have a plan for networks themselves and how Puppet can kind of tie into that. I know of Puppet, how it does for, like, sysadmin stuff, but I've never seen it. So I'm really interested in seeing it, kind of see how it makes their lives easier, and if it would make my life easier now that it actually supports Cisco here.
I'm Justin. I'm a support agent here at Reliant, and we work with the front end of Puppet, Linux and stuff every day when we're building red boxes, and I just like to learn more about the deeper stuff, and I think Charles is a great teacher for that stuff.
I'm a FSU student and I work here. I was kind of forced to be here, but I'm excited to learn more about Puppet. I use it every day, so anything is helpful.
Bullshit. Chris?
You're 40 more minutes.
I'm
support analyst too. Boy, I have to be here. I want to learn as much as I can about Puppet to work my way on the company.
Cool. All right, so basically, at Reliant here, we're a DevOps shop, and by DevOps, what I mean is that we basically combine development, engineering, and QA into one thing. So as an engineer, basically we write code to accomplish a purpose, and that's kind of like the development part is the writing of code, right? And then the engineering part is looking at the customer requirements and figuring out what we need to do. You know, you have a problem that needs solving, you mentioned you're a lot into networking and stuff like that, so maybe you have a couple of VPN concentrators that need to share routes and you need to manage active routing protocol between the two of them. What we use Puppet for is creating a configuration as code. So is everybody here familiar with Linux? Or is, like, who's more Linux savvy and who's more Windows savvy? Let's do Linux. Okay, Windows? Okay, so kind of half and half. Puppet does work on Windows. I have absolutely no experience with it. I don't know. It's something that we do want to get into. As of Puppet 3.0, they've gotten a lot stronger with Windows. Generally with Windows, we just say, hey, you already have Active Directory and a domain and group policy. Let's, you know, use the tools that Microsoft says that works. You know, sometimes we do have requirements where people have a server or something like that where they want to manage. Maybe they're using like a local policy. They're not using group policy. Puppet is a way that we can do that, and you don't have to pay the licensing costs. We haven't had a customer come to us and say, hey, we need you to do this yet. But it is an interesting thing, and I would like to take a look at that one day. But we're primarily a Linux shop, and our product is software. There's a red box here, and the red box is basically, we're hardware agnostic. It doesn't need to be red. It doesn't need to be a box. It could be, a Dell Optiplex, or it could be a Cisco running a one of those little card things that you put in a Cisco to run operating systems. But anyway, it doesn't matter what the host is. We run stuff in, different hypervisors. We write software. So basically, the engineering part is saying, hey, here's a problem that we're going to try to solve. The development is writing actual code that's going to solve the problem. And the QA is continuous QA. Go on in.
There's a stool right here.
There's a stool thing.
We just started, so we basically just went around and did introductions. Do you want to introduce yourself?
My name's Matthew Chen.
And where do you work?
I'm currently volunteering at an elementary school. I'm a computer technician assistant.
Okay, cool.
Which elementary school?
Astoria Park.
Cool. So I just started talking about DevOps and what DevOps is and how we use it here at Reliant. So basically it's a combination of engineering, development, and QA. So basically the QA part is that as we write the code, we're testing it, we're verifying that we're not breaking things, and that everything works as we think it would. So when you practice DevOps, you're kind of a one-man shop. You do everything yourself, and you're not relying upon like a QA team and different stuff like that, per se. Not to say that you can't, but as you do things, you really do take ownership of your project. So you're trying to accomplish something. You know what you're trying to accomplish. You write the code. You work with the customer. You're customer facing. To try to accomplish things, and then you make sure that it works, and then you push that into production so that it solves whatever problem that they're having.
Where's my notebook?
So what is Puppet? Puppet is a language. It's a Ruby-based programming language. And the whole point of Puppet is we're trying to describe the state of a system. So for instance, you know, with Linux, there's all these different services. There's all these different configuration parts to a server. You know, for a web server, you have Apache or Nginx running. You may have HAProxy or some kind of load balancer running. You may have you know, user accounts that you want to manage on that same server. You want to harden it, right? You want to ensure that it's running the latest versions of SSH and OpenSSL. And you basically want to ensure that all your systems are in a state that you're comfortable with. But as a, you know, as a small shop, you may be responsible for a lot of servers out there. So, you know, large companies have many servers that accomplish different things. With DevOps, you can have a small team that is able to create them and do the care and nurturing for them without having to like log in to every single one of them and edit configuration files. So the old style of system administration is to, you know, you start up a new computer, you log into it, you know, apt-get install Apache, and you go and you edit your configuration files, and you sit there and you tweak and you get it working, and it's like, boom, you work, you know, it's working. Maybe you set it up to backup, and you're good. And then next time you have that problem, you do the same thing over again, right? And then next time you have a problem for a new customer, you do the same thing over again. With Puppet, you write the code, and then you understand all your tools at that point, and those tools now empower you to deploy. So if you need to deploy, you know, 10 Apache servers and like a couple proxies to distribute the load between those, you literally write some code that describes the configuration of what you want, then you push it out to those. And it uses, typically there's a client-server architecture where the clients are out there and they're looking for the Puppet server. And when it comes and says, hey, you know, this is me, where's my configuration? The Puppet server says, okay, what's your identification? And the identification is the host name, typically. And it says, okay, you're this host. You're going to get everything that's going to make you an Apache server. And here's the configuration. It uses templates so that whatever unique configuration needs to go to that host can be pushed down. So if that host has, you know, an IP address that's different from these other hosts, that can go to that. You know, all the information goes to where it needs to. That makes it really nice for us because we have a whole bunch of clients and a lot of them share a lot of the base infrastructure. So, for instance, I mentioned hardening earlier. We want to make sure that when you know, there's a new exploit for Bash that comes out, we want to be able to get that to all of our customers as soon as possible. So we have a module, and the module basically can ensure specific versions of software. And if a customer gets the updates for that module, it will ensure that the Bash software is now up to date. So that's nice. You only have to do one thing. You only have to edit one line of code, really, and you can push that out to thousands of hosts. And it's good for the future too, because now you're getting new customers and they're automatically getting all that code also. Certain things like Apache, for instance, if you have a really nice Apache module, you're able to customize everything about it, and you can have customers that subscribe to that module, and all they need to do is tell you the site-specific stuff. So, you know, maybe they're hosting Netflix.com or something like that, so you capture that information. And maybe, like, I'm not sure what other specific information will be like host specific, but basically you can just capture the specific host information for that site, and when it checks in, it's going to build itself and it's going to get everything it needs. So that's kind of the power of DevOps, and that's the power of Puppet. Chef and Ansible are two other tools in this environment that are also commonly used. We're going to talk about Puppet today. Puppet is what Reliant uses.
You said Chef and what else?
Ansible.
Ansible?
Yep.
A-N-S-I-B-L-E?
Yeah.
Okay.
So Puppet is like shell scripts on steroids, but distributed.
You can kind of think of it as like an SSH for loop. You know, it's going to log into all your crap and it's going to do this bash script or whatever that
right.
you have. But it's not like that. It's
right.
a declarative language where you declare the end state of something. It gives you much more than that.
Cool.
It gives you file integrity monitoring and like state monitoring. So for instance, if you're going to update some configuration, it knows the before, it knows the after, and it will log the difference. So it accomplishes like file integrity monitoring. It's like a security tool that you can use to ensure that things are what they should be,
right.
for instance. So it's a useful tool for that. Anybody else have any questions?
I'm sorry, like when you change the configuration module or whatever, how does it know to deploy to the rest of the servers? Does the service ask for it at like a specific time, or is it like a push or something?
Yeah, so typically you can run it as a daemon, and when it runs as a daemon, it's just going to check in. You grab one of these seats. So yeah, it'll check in at a frequency, and it's configurable, so you can tell like every 1,200 seconds or whatever. That you don't have a lot of control doing it that way. So the way that we do it is through a cron job, and when it basically it checks in at certain increments that are offset and stuff like that. So it'll periodically, however you want it to, you can have it check in once a day, you can have it check in once every 30 minutes. It's just up to you. It depends upon how often you think your configuration is going to change and how many nodes you have also. There's a scaling issue involved with how many you can check in at the
every
same
second
time.
Or whatever, yeah.
Right, so like, I mean, scaling is kind of an advanced topic, but if you have, I don't know, say 500 nodes that are checking into like a, just a normal old server, it's not like spec to be like a high powered server, you're going to start to hit like CPU limitations. So that's when you start to maybe decide, do I really need to have a check in every 30 minutes?
Right.
No, because I only do
like
changes this often,
yeah.
Stuff like that.
Sure.
Anybody else have any questions?
You said it was in Ruby. How much Ruby do you have to know to be able to do stuff?
You don't have to know any Ruby. It's its own language. So it was built. It's built using Ruby code, and it has its own language in there that is Ruby-like. There's sometimes when I've had to do some Ruby, and it's basically when you need to create like a custom fact or a custom provider or a custom type. There's specific things, but there's a lot of boilerplate. So you don't need to know a lot of Ruby. You can borrow the boilerplate, and you can if you can. If you're an IT guy, you can kind of probably figure it out just by, kind of looking at it. It's not like you're sitting in there like hardcore Ruby. The syntax is actually very friendly, and it's super easy. It's like the easiest programming language there is. It's easier than Bash. I like Python. It's so easy.
I've been trying to learn Python, so if it's around like that.
Oh, it's not even like that. No, Python's hard, like, compared to this. this is it's very finite what you need to know for Puppet. Working here, in DevOps and stuff, Puppet is not the hard part. The hard part is figuring out the solution to the problem. Puppetizing the solution is like, okay, well, that's the easy part. But, customers will have crazy problems. And, we do a lot of stuff here with, lately we've been doing Windows and KVM and, working with different hypervisors and giving tools to people where they can just push buttons and reboot shit and that kind of stuff. So the hard part is not actually like creating the code, it's figuring out what you need to create. So you'd almost have to be a master and you have to understand like every Linux service there is. There's like Squid and there's content filtering and there's NTP and DNS and there all these sort of things. All those have their own configuration, their own syntax. That's where the knowledge that's the tricky part. Once you understand what you need to do, Puppet just helps you get into that state. It just helps you get into that last part. Make sense?
Yes.
Anybody else? Alright, so moving on. So I mentioned that it is like a client server. Typically you would have a Puppet server that would hold all the answers, and the clients would check in and they would say, hey, this is me, you know, give me that code. But you can also run it without the server. You can just run commands. You can just run, that's why I got demonstrating. I'm going to write some code here today, and I'm just going to run it locally. Instead of running it against a server, you can just apply the local code. So I'm going to demonstrate that. What is configuration management good for?
Consistency.
Yes. What else?
Quick deployments.
Yes.
You still won't answer.
Better security.
So security, speed, consistency. Those are the main ones that I can think of off the top of my head. So, you know, with security, you want to have, you want to ensure that something is the state that you expect it to be in. So if you don't want Brian to log in, then you can ensure that his account is not there anymore because we just fired him, right? That's something that you could do with Puppet, because you would ensure his account is not active anymore and it would be removed. If you want to ensure the firewall is a specific configuration, then it will ensure it. If there's a change, it'll tell you the before, it'll tell you the after, and it will log that result, and that is an auditable event that your monitoring team would be able to take action on, and it's also a requirement for PCI security and you know, probably other HIPAA.
9,000 other audits.
Yep.
Yeah, I already have a use for this.
Yep.
As we cycle people in and out, that and you got to add them to a whole bunch of servers.
Yep. Right.
Yeah,
so
that's kind
you
of
can
a hassle, because you have
write
to do
code
that one at
the
time.
Deploy it to many things. Consistency. This is super important. So one of our customers is Party City. They have, I don't know how many locations they have, 2,000 to 5,000, somewhere in there. A lot of those are Halloween cities that are kind of like, they come up just in October. But their customer has a whole bunch of locations, and in order for their IT team to be able to manage them, they want to have, they want to know that there's consistent configuration across all their sites. They don't want to log into a site and be like, oh, this is weird, or this is different, or, you know, it's like, well, this one was built by this guy, so, you know, it's got this on it. And no, like, basically, when you build a system with Puppet, they're all the freaking same. And the only differences are the differences that you already know about, because you've, you know, identified those, and they're in the spot. So, you know, the IP addresses are different, maybe the host names are different. There's a small list of valid differences. So having a consistent widespread, you know, over all these locations allows you to have a smaller IT team. It allows you to a better team to, or, you know, actually do better, be more effective at your job. All right, so just going to briefly talk about installing Puppet. Super easy on Linux. You just, like on Debian, you just have to get installed Puppet. You know, there's really nothing to it. So whatever distro you're used to using, you can just install whatever. It pretty much comes with the default, like a pretty sane default kind of configuration. So you can pretty much start using it right away. You probably do want to think a little bit in terms of how you want to deploy it. In production, you're probably going to want to have a Puppet server and your Puppet clients. What you need for that to work is you need either DNS to work, or you at least need to be able to resolve the hosting Puppet. So as a Puppet agent, you just, all you really need is to have it installed, and you need to know where Puppet is. So if you can ping Puppet, then you can run Puppet. And then on the server side, depending upon what version of Puppet you're using, you can run different things. So the newest version of Puppet is Puppet 4. It basically has a web browser or web server built into it, so you don't need to run something and proxy it. Before you use something like Nginx to run as the front end, you proxy back to your Puppet master. You'd be running as a separate daemon. Puppet 4, you guys are all starting new, just use Puppet 4, and you won't have to ever go through that transition. We're going through the transition because we've been around for a while. So If you can ping Puppet, the other requirement is you need to connect to it on the firewall port of 8140. Here's just one port. So that's all you need to do. You just need to get to it. If you get to it, then you can say, hey, this is me. Here's my configuration. The Puppet server is going to compile a catalog. So it's going to say, all right, well, that's you. It's going to take the code that it knows about you, and it's going to condense it into some kind of, you know, optimized crap, shove it over to you. And then it would run locally, and it would apply all the different things that are specific to that node. That's pretty much how that works. Also, there is a Puppet training VM, I think is what they call it. Basically, on the Puppet website, you can remember it over in Puppet. That's what I have. It's running in a virtual box here. If you just want to play around with it, you can download the VM, and you can. It has tutorials, and you can just kind of run through those, and it'll teach you the basics. It's pretty easy and user friendly.
Oh, what type of VM?
I think they give you a couple different ones. They probably give you like, well, I know they give you a VMDK. I'm running it in VirtualBox, so I got it in VirtualBox somehow. I don't know. It's been a while since I did it.
Is it the server or the client?
It's a VM that has Puppet installed. I don't think it's, well, it might be running a server. Whoa. Can't see my screen anyway. I bumped my font up so big here. So yeah, there's it looks like there are some servers, because Puppet Dashboard is on here. So Puppet Labs is a private company. They're actually, they're venture capitalist funded. They're an actual company that's trying to make money. So they have a product called Puppet,
Enterprise.
The Enterprise.
It's like an enterprise version of it.
So for the most part, it's free, open source, and it's got an Apache 2.0 license, so anybody can use it. You don't have to pay them anything or acknowledge them at all, which is awesome. But for a large enterprise that wants to have support and stuff like that, there is the option to get the enterprise version and pay for it. And with that comes basically like a pretty front end with like a web browser, like this Puppet dashboard right here. I've actually never looked at it, but it just gives you some stats and different stuff like that. So I don't know. If you're a company that has a lot of money to blow, like I guess, you know, some people do that, but I don't know too much about that. What I'm going to show you today is basically I'm not going to run it against a server. I'm just going to run the commands locally, because that's not the important part. I just want you guys to kind of get a feel of what the code looks like and how it works a little bit. Let's see. So, all right. So basically, we have this puppet.conf file, right? As a Puppet agent, or somebody who's checking in to Puppet, this is the configuration that they're going to have. There's a whole lot of lines in here. This is basically from the learning VM. I wanted to do this on a VM in order to show you guys. I can't show you like a production code or anything. So we only had like 5 lines. Like, this is a bunch of just stuff. But this is a Puppet master also, so a lot of this has to do with that. The most important thing that is in the Puppet conf is telling the server who you are. So it's basically how you're identifying yourself. And the way that it identifies, and the way that Puppet checks in and talks to the master is it uses SSL certificates. So PKI is an important part of the way that Puppet works. And the Puppet master is a CA. And when a node checks in for the first time, it's going to say, hey, this is me. I'm going to sign my own, or I'm going to create my own certificate request, and I have my private key, and I got my public key, and you know, just sign it for me, we'll be good. And then the Puppet server, you can set it to automatically do it, but by default, you pretty much just say, okay, yeah, I got to sign that. and then after that, the node can come in and run Puppet. At any point, there could be certificate errors or issues, and when you first get into Puppet, you might bash your head against the desk because you're gonna see Puppet, you're gonna see certificate issues. You'll probably forget this, but the easiest way to fix certificate issues is to just start with a clean slate. And basically, you remove everything on your agent, and you remove the something, whatever is specific to that node, so it's the certificate for that node on the server, they just have to go in and regenerate it. And when that happens, it'll usually solve most of your problems. But at the very beginning, like I remember I spent so many hours like trying to get past like certificate errors, it was a pain in the ass. And so don't get stuck there. It gets better.
I would agree with that statement.
All right. So went over install, public conf, certificates. All right, so let's create a simple something to do with Puppet. So in order for this to work, alright, so I'm going to create a manifest. Puppet uses manifests because we're describing the state of something. So in order for a node to check in, the first thing you would have to have is a node definition. So I'm going to create a node definition. My host name is Learn. So I'm going to call it Learn. So we have an empty node definition. I'm just going to put something in here just to prove that it's working. I'm going to say so this is basically just demonstrating the syntax. We're
very JSON-like.
Yeah, I mean, it's a structural language. The spacing's not important, like it is in Python. You actually don't need these up until just recently when they're starting to enforce that. But there's certain things that are best practice.
Sure.
So Puppet apply. We'll put that to a 2. We're not there yet. All right. So Puppet apply. Oh, look at that. So what we just did is we said the local machine run this manifest, and it's going to go through and do exactly what it says in here. So it basically, this is showing you that node learn ran a notify, and the name, or the, this is actually the this is actually the title of the notify is its works. Then the message, just because it's a notify, is the same thing. The title of a resource is this first part right here before the colon. Every Puppet type has a title. So for instance, there's a bunch of different types. Actually, I've pulled up Thinking in Advance, some helpful links. It's typewriters. So there's a bunch of types in here. The most common ones are file, if you want to create a file somewhere. And exec, these are generally bad practice. You generally don't want to run execs. There's a few use cases where they're good, but you kind of want to always try to solve your problems in a different way. An exec is saying, go do this over there. You generally don't need to say, hey, go do this over there. You can usually do that a little bit of a cleaner way. Also, execs take time. We do use execs for some things. Like during a Puppet run, we'll call apt-get update. So we'll ensure that the packages, we use Debian, the packages are up to date. There's use cases for execs. I ran across, I was messing with one today, where in order to get a Ruby program to install cleanly and fully, you have to run bundle install. So the exec would do bundle install it would only do it if bundle check failed. So bundle check is a check that says, are all the dependencies there? And if all the dependencies aren't there, then it'll run the exec. So it doesn't actually run the exec every single time. When you run the exec every single time, it causes your, it takes a lot more resources. Makes your Puppet runs longer. You want to have your Puppet runs quick. You don't want Puppet to run and take 10 minutes to complete your run. You want it to take 30 seconds. That's much better. It's much more scalable. Cron is a type. So if you want to create a cron tab, you can set the minutes, you can set the hours, you can set the command that it's going to run, and you can expect it to do what you thought it was going to do, right? It's going to create that cron tab. August is pretty cool. This is a tool that you can edit files where you don't have to create a template. So for instance, with this file type, you can create a file and say, just drop in this blob of strings or binary, just drop it in, you know, maybe it's PNG, just put the file there, right? That's one type. You can also do a template. When you do a template, you would describe the content of what that file is. So templates allow you to be dynamic. You can use conditionals. You can put variables in there. That's another option. August is a way where you can edit a file, but it uses it has like built-in logic where it kind of understands what kind of file that is. So for instance, grub.cfg is a file where there's a lot of shit in that file. It's a big ass file. There's a lot going on, and if you would edit it with a file type, you would basically need to like take that file and copy and paste it into your code, into your module that you're trying to manage that file with, and then tweak the one part you want. And then it's like, you don't really want to do that, because what if Grub updates? You know, now you're using a different base. You know, I did this on Grub 1, and now we're on Grub 2, and now it doesn't work the same, and stuff like that. It's not feature friendly and it's ugly, right? So August is a cool tool where it can say, you know, the part of Grub that calls the bootloader, I want to edit just that line, and I want it to have this on there. So there's a line in there, it's like Grub CMD or I don't really know what it is, but basically August has a concept of lenses, and all the popular configuration files in the etc directory on Linux have lenses, and basically it knows, it uses, you know, regex and programming magic to know that if I'm going to edit that line, I want it to be like this. So you can append things to your grub options by just using obvious and using attributes instead of overriding the entire file. Etc modules is one. There's a bunch of them. Actually, we use the network, Etsy network interfaces, and Debian is the file that you use to manage your IP addresses, your gateways, your all that kind of stuff. It manages that entire file. Any question?
So you do go from Grub 1 to 2, and now the syntax is totally different. Like, presumably the server itself will get an update, but is that like automatic as well? Or do you have to tell it to do that? What you still want to stay on one, and now I think it's on two, so it...
Right, so, if you were using August to manage that file, August would know the Grub version, because you're just trying to edit that one line, and it would be able to have the logic to update the line that you're trying to update, assuming that the line is the same. I mean, I don't know all the differences between Grub version 1 and Grub version 2. But
I hit my head against them. Well, okay, so that's fine, it won't go backwards and ruin things, but like when a new version comes out, that's pretty much what I was getting at. You have to update the server often.
Yeah, I mean, generally with Linux, when new versions of things come out, they try not to break your old configuration. So, you know, if you're doing major upgrades of software versions, then that's something that you always want to pay attention to.
Okay.
Any other questions? Alrighty. Okay, so some other things. So let's see, what are some other interesting ones? Mount, I'm going to mount something. All these Nagios things are for monitoring. Notify is one that I just showed you. That's more of just spitting out debugging information to your output, which is also logged if you're capturing that information over syslog. Package is if you want to install something. It's common for every Puppet module to have packages, right? So if you're managing NTP, it's going to install NTP. If you're managing bind, it's going to install bind. And whatever other dependencies you're labeled or you're listed there, it would install those. Services, this is how you would manage a service. So inside of an NTP module, you would manage the NTP service. You would ensure that it starts when the computer starts, and you would ensure that it stays running. So if Puppet runs every 30 minutes, it's going to make sure that that sucker is still running. If it crashes, it's going to start it up. That's also interesting because if you have logs and you're looking at these things, you can say, all right, where are all my services? And we use Splunk. So you shovel that shit into Splunk and you say, okay, what is starting? Like, why is this service starting all the time? Did it reboot? Is there a correlation there? No, it must be crashing. Why is it crashing all the time? So you can really gain insight by managing things and then reviewing the logs and seeing what Puppet's actually doing in your environment.
So theoretically, you could have your sort of Puppet install set up so that a client comes online, it sees, oh, there's a new, let's say, package server. You're pointing to a new location. Oh, here's a new server, and you can tell it, say, okay, Puppet, update the package configuration.
Yep.
And install these packages, do something else, and you might want to have to change another configuration. Install something else, et cetera, et cetera. And that's all.
You can do it all. Yep.
Okay.
And there's resource ordering. So for instance, I mentioned that we do have an exec, and one of the execs that we use is apt-get update. Are you familiar with Debian? Okay, so one of the first, actually, even before apt-get update runs, we manage the app sources. So the first thing that happens, period, is we say, what are the sources for packages? And if the sources change, it's going to update those changes. So if there's a new mirror, the mirror changes, something like that. So make sure that it's got the best mirror, most up-to-date mirror configuration. Then it's going to run apt-get updates, so it's going to know where all the packages that are available. It's going to know, if there's any upgrades that are available. And then at that point, if there's any modules that you've called for the first time, they're going to install something. They would install it based upon that new information. And if there's any modules that are trying to install a specific version, they would be ready to install that version if it's available. Or if you have a package set to latest, it would install the latest version dependent upon what all it has in its mirrors.
Wow. That's almost exactly like the for a Node.js web app. They have a set of dependencies in a manifest. Same exact thing.
Yeah.
That's cool.
Users, this is how you get rid of Brian so he doesn't get on your network. And there's a bunch of different Puppet types. So give you another idea of how this works. So we have this node, and it's a lonely node. What if we had a whole bunch of nodes and we wanted them all to do the same thing? We would probably, I'm trying to think of a, let's just create a simple module here. I think where they put their stuff here. Okay, all the pads are different. Modules. Okay. So, if I put a module in here, basically I can use that module in my code. So I'm just going to do a simple message of the day module. And what this is going to accomplish is basically updating a file on the file system. In order for that to work, I'm going to need a manifest directory. And I'm going to need probably a templates directory. All right, so nit.pp is a class or a magic manifest thing that basically gets run every time you invoke a module. So if you include a module, then this sucker is going to get run every time. We're going to create a class. in my class. We're just going to have it do one thing. We're going to use a file type. And the file type is going to be the message. We're going to ensure that it's present. You can do fancy things like set the owner to group. You need to set the group to group. You set the permissions. What is that permission thing? These are, you don't have to do all these. I'm kind of highlighting some of the options. But yeah, so.
Is that like an equal greater than sign, or is that an arrow?
That is a hash rocket. I don't know why they call them a hash rocket, but that's a hash rocket. It's basically saying this is that.
Okay.
Yeah, it's basically you have your, it's kind of like a key value kind of thing, like ensure set to present, owner set to root, that kind of thing. For the content, I'm going to set this to welcome and close that. That's pretty much all we need for a file type. You don't need any of that stuff for a file type, actually. All you really need is the ensure presence, good practice, and then the content. Or you can also do source. Content says that you're going to use a template. And source would say that you're going to use a file. And a file is actually, the Puppet server runs a file server, and it would grab it from the Puppet server, or the file server. So there's optimization issues involved with serving out a file versus serving out a template. Let's see. So I'm still here. I'm going to apply this. All right, so, we didn't actually update this to use it. So we're going to include our new module. All right, let's see, file path, let's see, 4045. Oh, I didn't set a path. So, you can set the path in the name. But so I'm going to set it right here. Alright. So it ran. You see from here, it says that it ensured that it was created. If we take a look at it, welcome.
Cool.
Now we have a custom message of the day. So,
and if you were to change that,
it'll change every time. Every time Puppet runs.
Yeah.
So, this is at this point is when you're like, oh, maybe I should think about version control. And that's when you would use something like get for SVN and version your changes. It's important to do that, especially when you're working with a team. So everybody kind of stays in track. Everybody's doing things together. The other kind of important thing about version control is that you can do releases. So maybe I change this, but the customer or whatever, it's not going to go into effect yet just because I made it work or whatever. This isn't a lab environment. You know, it's committed locally to a local, you know, Git repo or whatever, but it's not pushed to what would be in, like, a staging environment or a production environment or anything. It's basically just here right now. So using Git would give you more tools to be able to stage that out slower and test your changes into smaller, you know, pilots and stages and stuff like that. So with content, you can do things like inline templates, welcome. And then, let's see, which I think went very well. Let's see, this should work. Let's see if that works. Nope.
And like semicolon at the end.
Oh.
And you don't have a closed parentheses.
That's exactly what it was. Okay. Alright, so my host name is Learn. So I said, welcome, Learn. So this demonstrates how you can use an inline template inside of your content to create more dynamic data. That hostname field is a variable that comes from a thing called factor. Basically, if you run factor-p, this is going to show you all the different fun variables that it's going to give you just out of the box. And you can create new ones. So you'd asked about when you would need to know Ruby, if you need to write a custom fact. That's something that you would need to know Ruby. Stuff some here is virtual. It knows if this is running on OpenVZ, if it's running on VMware, if it's running on Hyper-V, it's going to hit true. You know, it's on VirtualBox, so it's true. It says it's a virtual host, right? It's got its IP address in here. It's going to have netmasks in here, MAC address, OS family, Red Hat. That's really interesting. Operating system CentOS. So within Puppet, say you're deploying to, for a long time we had Debian and OpenSolaris that we deployed to. So we would have conditionals in there that would say, if you're on OpenSolaris, you install this. If you're on Debian, install this. Manage this configuration from this and this and this. So you can use the same module and have it work on different things. So that's
just 1.8. That's interesting.
Yeah, so this is using actually an older version of Puppet. This is using Puppet 2.7.12. The reason for that is because I downloaded this virtual machine when I started here 3 years ago, and that's what was new. Puppet 4 is now what's new. This is just an old virtual machine that I quickly cobbled together and made sure it was still working so I could do this. Anything else interesting? Uptime is kind of cool. So,
wow, all 1,646 possibilities.
So, that's how that variable came in there. You can set variables. So, if you go into your node, right in here, you can set stuff. This should work too. Since this is a live demo, let's see what rolled dice.
So it tells you where the problem is?
Yeah, the errors are generally pretty decent. Welcome, Bar. So that kind of demonstrates a little bit of how you can use variables. So you can set the variables within your manifests. That's easy, but now your configuration is your code, and that is an issue because now every time you want to set foo to something, you gotta write some code and you gotta release it and go through all your QA, because now you're writing code at this point. It's not just creating configuration data and changing that. So if I had my IP address in here, say a customer changes IP address, now you have to go through this whole process to get new code to them. They have to QA everything at this point. It's much easier to pull that configuration data dynamically through like a outside source, like a database. We use Redis. You can use a lot of different things to look up your data. That's just what we use because it's very fast. So that's a thing that you would want to think about when you're trying to figure out how to implement this in your organization is, you know, you really shouldn't have a lot of your configuration data within here. You should just stick to, you know, your modules should have not a lot of logic in there, or not a lot of things that would change. You know, it should be, you drop in a module, you drop things in, and it just works, and you feed it with some kind of outside thing that you're able to change a little bit quicker. If that makes sense? All right. Another thing I'm going to show you is... So this is an inline template. If you want to be real fancy, and you say, okay, my message of the day is like, I want this to be like a bomb-ass message of the day. So I'm not going to put it here. I'm going to describe this in its own file. So you would do like, .erb. The extension is ERB because that's a Ruby template. It uses Ruby syntax in order to, or it uses the Ruby ERB syntax, which is easy. So, templates, I'm going to create that file. Puppet knows, because I'm calling template, it knows to look through all of your modules. This is already in the modules here, and it's just smart that it'll look in the template structure in the modules to look for templates.
So you don't have to be so gender specific with the path.
Yeah, you don't have to say like, you know, /op.
Cool.
You know, it goes to, you know, it's it knows the reference. So welcome, all our lines, blah, and then you know, now you want to say your food. So, oh yeah, this is Puppet 4 friendly with the at sign there. It's not required, but it likes to complain to you and say that your syntax is deprecated if you don't do stuff like that. All right, let's apply that. Nope. So basically, we created the same file a couple different ways, and this is kind of like the most, if you want the most control, we work with like point of sale software and we manage configuration files with point of sales. So with different, site A may have 10 registers, site B may have 5, they all have their own unique identification. So with templates, we're able to feed those variables in here. I mentioned that the data lies in a database. So if the database changes, next time Puppet runs, it's going to grab that new data, it's going to feed that new data inside the template, and then there's it's going to hook into the service, it's going to restart the service. So basically that's how you know, dynamically manage services. Yeah. Questions? So that's kind of like how you, how would you use a module? You can set these things up where this is just one node. You can have a bunch of nodes, and they can all inherit from a common class. So if you wanted all your classes to have the message of the day, you would define a class, and you would have your include message of the day. Maybe you would have include your hardening stuff to make sure that you know people aren't going to hack into you. And maybe you want all your user accounts in there also. And then for your web server node, you would have, well, I need Apache on this guy, but I don't need, you know, I'm not a syslog server. I'm just an Apache server. So the syslog server would have, you know, syslog server on it. And that's kind of how you would organize your stuff. Your everything would inherit a common base that's useful for everything, and then your node specific stuff would have what's relevant to that node. Let's see, what did I not talk about? So this is all open source, and you know, you can read all this stuff. There's tons of code out there. There's a website called Puppet Forge. Puppet Labs maintains it, and it's basically a bunch of modules, and it's kind of like, you know, people vote on them and, you know, kind of put stars on them or whatever, and there's certain ones that are like kind of the gold standard for organizing certain things. So if you want to do NTP and you don't feel like writing it yourself, you can go to Puppet Forge and you can just grab their module and start using it. If you want to write your own, because a lot of times they're big and, like, you know, it's like, oh, I don't need all that crap, I just need to do this one little thing. You can look at it and you can borrow from it. So it's interesting to read other people's modules, and it's a great source. And also GitLab, like tons of people write stuff and it's all over Git. So if you're trying to manage something, you can just pretty much Google you know, what you're trying to do, and it'll point you towards some code, and you can, you know, start using it immediately. I have mCollective written down on here. mCollective is a tool, so Puppet checks in and gets its configuration and stays that way. mCollective is more of like an SSH for loop where you say, go perform all these actions over there. With mCollective, you can tell it to go out and restart all the services, or go out and update everything to this version, or whatever. It's not under version control when you do it that way. And you can, you know, you haven't ensured the state of everything since it was built, but it can, it does have a use. Sometimes it can be useful to do certain things. So I just throw that out there as a tool that basically it kind of operates over the same ports and certs and stuff like that. So if you are using Puppet and you have a need where, you know, you can even use it passively. You can grab all the MAC addresses from all your sites, or you can have all your sites execute an arbitrary command, which is kind of cool. So you can have all your sites try to get to Facebook, and oh, why can that one get to Facebook and the other ones can't, something like that. So I'm just throwing that out there. It's kind of like a tool that comes in the toolkit. It's an interesting tool. Is there anything else you guys have questions on, or you want demonstrated? I mean, that could build some more modules.
And this works on switches as well, switches and firewalls?
So it's a declarative language that you can get to do things. So people have jerry-rigged it to do different things. So I've seen it manage AWS. So you can create a VPC, create EC2 instances, or you can, EC2 instances. You can create, you know, block volumes, and you can configure IP addresses. Basically, you know, there's an API for that. Right. So it has, you know, plugins you can hook in and do stuff like that. So it really depends what it is and what you're trying to do. There may be better tools for doing stuff like that, though.
Yeah.
If you're trying to manage, you know, I don't know, it may not be the best.
Well, that's one of the things that my boss was interested in was using it for switch configuration. A billion different ones. I think everything on the planet. I've seen stuff in there that I've never seen before. I've never heard of before.
From my understanding, Cisco Catalyst line, this doesn't support, because it requires an agent to run. And you can't do installs of agents on anything within the Catalyst or the iOS line. But with the latest version of NXOS, which is basically Linux, you can actually get into enhanced command line, and they're allowing modules to be installed there.
Cool.
So Puppet is supposed to be supporting at least the Nexus line, NXOS and Nexus line of switches, like the 5Ks, the 7Ks, the 9Ks. I haven't heard about ASAs. I'm sorry if I'm prompting this, but I've been doing research on this.
Yeah, no, that's
I haven't
cool.
heard about
yeah.
ASAs, but I think they also work on F5 LTMs.
We've got F5.
I think.
We've
which
got
was
F5
something
F5
I was going to ask if there was a comprehensive list, because I think I heard that they do. I know you can do F5 programmability with like REST API calls, but I didn't know if this actually had a agent yet for LTM.
Yeah, that's not something that I've specifically looked into. We don't manage switches with Puppet. A lot of the switches that we work with are maintained by the customers, so they have their own tools and, you know, version control and whatever.
Well, no, I still found all about 6 different uses for this already.
Yep.
if I can get the agent on my Nexus switches, it makes my life a whole lot easier.
Yep.
Yeah. That's what this is
and
about.
If you,
yeah.
if you can accomplish that, let me know, and I'd like to see that. That'd be really
yep.
cool.
I may have to look at that. Monday's a holiday. No one will be in the office. I may have to look at that Monday.
Yeah, let me know how that works out.
My boss won't be there to see
what we're doing.
Anybody? Is there anything you guys, that, I mean, it's been hard to demo and go over everything. Is there anything I'd like to know more about? Or?
Can this be used for, like, regression testing, some type, some stuff? I mean, I know you know, maybe just like, you know, you said how Puppet can pull from a database, so you said, well, pull this stuff from a database, throw it on this new machine, or this app, the new update of the app, and I should get a file on this server, and this is what the file should say.
Yeah.
This probably isn't the best way. Again, like you were saying, it may not be the best way, but can you sort of build a sort of regression testing workflow?
Yeah, I mean, so basically, you're creating your configuration, and you're expecting an outcome, and you're doing it under version control. So if you can do it under version control, and like there's automated ways of testing things also, and you can build up to it. Was it CI, Travis CI, or whatever? So there's different things you can like hook in, and when you commit, you can have it automatically run tests. And you can develop your own, you know, whatever your needs are. I'm not sure exactly what your needs would be, but everything is under version control. So if you were trying to prove something worked on this version, and you can do it on this version and on this version, then you can script it. So every time you do a new version, it all still continues to work. So you can write test cases and stuff like that, and make sure that things continue to work as you develop code. Does that answer your question?
Mm-hmm. I'm curious, Brian, what you're thinking you're going to use this for.
Every time we have somebody leave, we have to go in and remove their user account in probably 20 or 30 different integrated lights out environments.
Yeah.
One of our clients uses Active Directory integrated with their Linux environment, which is awesome, because now you only have to remove it the once. Actually, we don't even do that. But one of our other clients, and admittedly they only have about 20 or 30 servers, but they don't. And so you have to go in and add accounts for every one of those people every single time somebody comes in, they shift things around. It takes time. It takes a great deal of time. And another thing that we're looking at doing is locking down our environment a little bit and having to make some changes to the sudoers file and then make it immutable. So this just got really simple. Doing it this way.
Sudoers modules are super easy. There's not a lot to them.
Yeah, I mean, it's you know, make a couple of changes to it to make it work the way we want and force the point and then just completely lock it down. But we have to do that on every Linux machine in our environment. And that's not just the two customers that I normally manage. That's everything else. So that environment just got a whole lot bigger. So no, I'm definitely seeing the possibility, just from the user management aspect of it, I'm seeing the possibilities of this.
There might also be a opportunity to do more with like groups and permissions. So when you manage stuff like this, you get a little bit more complex. You can, you know, develop a little bit better hierarchy of what types of users are in what groups and that kind of thing, and or shuffle around as you need. You can also see like your SSH public keys. You can log in and everything without, you know, you just do a release and now your new user can log into shit. Oh, that was nice.
That's pretty cool. And the syntax for this is a cross between JSON and it looks like CSS. And neither of which are terribly complex. And like I said, the whole manifest thing is looking a lot like the manifest and the which specific package version and I want the latest one. That's very Node.js-esque.
Yeah.
I've seen a lot of that in some of the other web development stuff. That's really cool.
There's just a few patterns, and patterns are pretty common. Like, there's advanced syntax and, you know, stuff like that, but I don't need to get into that thing. All right, well, that's everything. Yeah.
What kind of requirements do you need for the main server if trying to set one up?
So it depends how many hosts you're trying to do, and how often you're expecting them to check in. So you generally don't need them to check in very often. So as I was kind of saying before, is if you have just like any old, you know, maybe it's like a 3-year-old computer that's just, you know, decent, it's not terrible, you could probably do 100, 200 nodes every 30 minutes.
Does it run well in a VM, other than just the lab one?
Yeah. We're just really great on VMware. I'm not a big fan of Hyper-V, so I've had a few Hyper-V issues.
I don't know many people who are.
Yeah. We run it in OpenVZ, which is, you know, kind of a weird type of hypervisor. So, yeah, it works fine in virtualization.
Gotcha. I've got an old ESXi host sitting under my desk.
Yeah.
I can spin up a VM without having to bother my admin.
Yeah, just give it processor 2 if you got it. Give it 4 gigs of RAM. And it should be fine for 50 to 100 hosts. Get the lights and everybody can visit.
Thank you.
What's going on?
Cool.
Close your eyes.
I know. It's
Oh,
not too bad.
And this is a great book, Pro Puppet, if anyone's interested. The guy who created Puppet is James Turnbull. He wrote the first edition. This is the second edition. I actually haven't read the second edition, but I assume it's just as good as the first.
Cool.
Can I ask you a question?
Yes.
How long will it take y'all to upgrade to 4.0? Okay, yeah, just curious. Do you have an idea?
We're trying to have the, we're trying to be Puppet 4.0 friendly or ready by the end of the year.
Okay.
And then there'll be migration. We're going to have to migrate every customer over at one time.
That'll be fun.
Yeah.
The better question isn't how long will it take you, but what's your deadline?
Yeah.
We don't, there's benefits to it, but we're not being, like, you know, there's not a gun to our head saying, you know, you need to do this or whatever. Like, you don't want to be left in the dirt, you know, in the dust.
Yeah.
You know, there's a term that Gene Kim has called technical debt. So basically, as a IT shop gets older, you know, you put things to the side, or you accept certain things. You are okay with logging into 30 computers when somebody leaves. You know, that's technical debt. That's things that you haven't figured out a way to program your way out of yet. So,
Chris, do I still have access? You probably do.
Actually, change your password.
So, you know, migrating to Puppet 4 gives there's a lot of like resource like benefits to it. Like, folks can run a lot faster. M Collective isn't a bolt-on anymore, it's built in. Nginx is not required anymore, it's built in. Hira is the way that you can look up data from external sources, like Redis in our case. It's built in. Like, there's just a lot of things that ended up being like, you know, they just built the base system that the community ended up saying, okay, well, you know, this is cool. So we've been doing all these things.
Almost like Photoshop plugins, that we went and created it and said, hey, there you go. And they went, wow, everybody likes that. Go acquire this company, and this company.
Yeah.
No, new version.
Yeah, no, I mean, it's a process.
Yeah, that's cool.
Any questions about anything off topic? Visit.
You're in the